humans, gentle-ladies, lad-men, ladies and gentlemen, dreamers and dreams alike, and welcome to the Devolver Digital Forecast here at forecast.devolverdigital.com. Hi, I'm your co-host, JM.
And I am Jared.
Jared, did you just hear someone knock on my door?
I didn't, no. Someone knock on your door?
I did, yeah. Someone just knocked on my door. That is incredibly bad timing. Jared, vamp for a minute.
Only professional here, as you can see. Oh, that's funny. Who do we think it is?
A auspicious delivery of some kind.
I'm going to assume so, yeah. Somebody court trying to summons. Sell them something. A court summons.
Yeah. Jared, how'd the vamping
is,
go?
Is the warrant still open?
What? No, that's ridiculous. No, that's absurd. Jared, shush. Well, now that we're back. Hey, Jared, how's it going?
How you doing?
Good, I'm all right.
Who was it?
It was just a package that the guy felt like knocking to let me know was here.
Nick was right.
We don't have any guests yet. We haven't introduced them yet.
Oh, just letting you know.
Falling apart. Everything's falling apart, Jared. Speaking of falling apart, what's going on at Devolver Digital?
Go on.
Were you about to do the same joke?
No. I was going to say, what did they deliver? A segue? By the way.
A very good podcast.
About to do some news? We got some news?
I've got some Devolver news. Jared, Devolver news. We've got games that are still going to come out in the future. Upcoming games like Reigns Beyond for PC and Switch. Or Children of the Sun coming out April 9th for PC. And we've got so many recent releases, Jared. We've got recent releases too, Jared.
Like what?
Like Cricket Through the Ages. Mm-hmm. And Wizard with a Gun's newest update. The Bounty of Guns update. And Jared, today, as of, well, when the podcast airs, Pepper Grinder will be having to have already come out. Woo-hoo! Pepper Grinder's out on Thursday. Woo! And just recently, there's been a new update to the DLC for Stronghold DE, Jared.
Exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting.
Do you want to tell me more about that, or should I ask somebody else?
You should probably ask somebody else. Is there anyone else here we could ask?
Is this where we come in?
This is where you come in.
Oh, yeah. Hey!
This is the segue I ordered.
This is the segue. How's it going, guys?
It's good. How are you?
Oh, my God.
Keeping
it's
it
Nick
together.
Nick Tannehill, Chief Marketing Officer of Firefly Studios. And who's this? Tony DeLibero, Lead Programmer of Firefly Studios. Incredible.
Hello.
What a coincidence. Hi, guys. Do you want to hear my cat yell about how she doesn't want to be picked up?
Absolutely.
Please.
Oh, she didn't yell.
Oh, what a cutie.
Well, anyway, there's my cat. Hi, guys. How's it going?
It's good. How you doing?
Doing all right. Doing all right, thanks.
Well, thank you.
It's like we're the guys that turned up at the door. It's like we knew Option came in, and now we're hanging out.
Yeah.
Wrote our segues right in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the road. Yeah. Well, that was all too exhilarating, and I'm absolutely flustered. How's things over at Firefly? How's the new DLC been received? And what is the new DLC?
The new DLC.
And what is Stronghold?
The new DLC is a expansion for Stronghold Definitive Edition, which is essentially like... you know those classic sort of 90s RTS games, Command & Conquer, Age of Empires? Well, they did a bunch of like updates recently where you can sort of play the old games with completely new graphics and new missions and basically stuff that people have been asking for the last 20 years. They've been playing like those classic games for like 20 years. They've always been like, I've played this a million times. I want new missions. So we're finally delivering on that. Whether they like... you know, they're old and have kids now, or, you know, they somehow played Stronghold when they were, like, 2 years old, which is, we have to work out the math sometimes when we talk to people at shows, and they're like, I played this when I was a kid, and they're, like, maybe 15, and we're like, how is that possible? But yeah, whether they've been waiting 20 years or not, people love the kind of old school sort of visuals and style of gameplay. So yeah, it's an update with a brand new campaign, and it's been going out pretty well. Yeah, we had Stronghold D come out last year, and then people have been asking for DLC, so here it is. And we did a free update at the same time. So even if you don't give us money, you still get something.
Nice.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's been good. The reception's been awesome. It's been really nice to make the community happy.
The game, so the original Strongholds are 20-ish years old?
The original one is 22 years old, 2001. What are we now? 24? So yeah, like 22 years old.
What is time?
What is time? Yep.
Cool. And is this... I mean, I'm just curious right off the bat, like, how has community changed over that? Like, is this a new community, or is this a community that has coalesced later on, or is this, like, a continuous line of community?
Well, we kind of did this just because we're working on a separate project at the moment, which is using Unreal Engine, which we've told people about, and Tony's working on that, and that's going to take, you know, some time for us to make, so it's kind of a way for us to essentially give something to the core community. So I guess it was like aimed at the people who'd already played the older titles, but then like we were at GDC last week and some guy came up to us and he was like, I'd never played a strong game before, but I jumped on with DE and now I love the series. So I guess like unintentionally there are more people that were interested in it, but we originally did it for like just the core fans, just to give them something to kind of like chew on while they're waiting for their main course, I guess, if you want to call it that.
Fantastic.
And yeah, they've been asking us for it for ages, so it was kind of like we had some space to do it. So yeah, we kind of looked at Command & Conquer and Age of Empires and were just really inspired by those guys and how they'd, you know, really thoughtfully updated the games, because it's, you know, it can be quite hard to update something that's 20 years old and get it right. You have to make it how people remember it rather than how it actually is, so... That was scary.
Yep.
We seem to have, you know, done it well, and people seem to be happy with it. So gives us great pleasure to, you know, put that out there, and then while Tony's cooking up the main course, you know, give him something to start on.
Nice. Would y'all mind explaining Stronghold to someone who hasn't played it? Like what is Stronghold?
Go on, Tony.
All right. Well, back in the day when Age of Empires and games like that were coming out, it was kind of a change of pace in that it focused really on the castle life. And it comes from a history of city building games that our founders, Eric and Simon, worked on. They kind of wanted to take that idea of having a pretty intricate city simulation, but actually having a good RTS with real combat on top. That was kind of a new thing at the time. There wasn't really, Age of Empires was the closest thing. But Stronghold takes a much more granular simulation of the daily lives of people raising crops and creating goods and delivering them to stockpiles and warehouses and making your castle lay out very particular ways, much more so than a game like Age of Empires, which is really focused on more RTS feel in general.
Yeah.
So it kind of brought that to the table, and then the series has been carrying on ever since. I don't know how many mainline game releases in the series, but we've done remakes and that kind of thing as well. But we're, we have another line called Crusader. So we have Strongholds 1, 2, 3, Stronghold Legends, Stronghold Crusader 1, Stronghold Crusader 2, which I worked on. What else is there? Am I missing anything? The Stronghold Steam ports?
We tend to jump around sort of different historical periods. So I think the only other one is...
Warlords.
Warlords, yeah.
Yeah.
I was lead on that one as well. And now we're on to new tech. We retired our engine and that we were making our main games in, and we moved over to Unreal, and we've been living there quite happily for some time now. We hope to come out with something sooner or later.
Yeah, we sent our old engine off into the sea on a ship, you know, set fire to the ship and did the salute, and that was it. You know, we'd had our time. It was time to move on.
Although, see it in Valhalla.
Yeah.
As a programmer, I have to admit, I immediately dove into the ocean and swam to get a bunch of stuff off the ship that I still needed. Yeah.
So, how long have you guys been with Firefly?
quite a while, actually. Tony, do you want to go first?
I think I win that contest by a little bit. It was 2007. So I came on to work on a game called Dungeon Hero that was in production. They just started it and had a publisher, and it was going to be an Xbox 360 and PC game. More of an action RPG. It was actually kind of like very similar in ideas to Dark Souls, except not really about difficulty, but more so about narrative. And it was really fun to work on for a long time, but subject to a game industry crash, you know, a year or two later, we were we found ourselves without a publisher, and they were financing the project, so it had to get canceled, unfortunately. We shopped it around a bit, but eventually we were kind of furloughed for a while they looked to get funding for Stronghold 3, and I ended up working on in Austin for about 6 months at that point. And then they brought me back when they had funding again, and I picked up from there and carried on with, came on for Stronghold 3, and we finished that development. We moved on to Stronghold Crusader 2, Metamorph. I did a bunch of the Steam ports, the code end of it, of older games like Stronghold 2 and Stronghold Legends, and then Stronghold Warlords last few years, and then on to Stronghold Unreal Engine. Lately. Nice.
And Mystery Project.
Yes, exactly. And I've been very fortunate they shipped me off to PAXs and stuff like that to do shows, because I'm the American who likes to do that stuff. That's what it comes down to, I think.
You're also only about a few hours drive from Boston, right? So that helps.
There is that as well, PAX.
But you're also
PAX
a machine.
Is a no-brainer for
you're
me.
Also a machine.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So,
you're also charming.
Yes,
oh,
he
you're
is.
So sweet.
Yes.
So. I get to meet fabulous people like JM and Jared in person, you know, and hang out with Nick and my other UK cohort, because when I came on, you know, we were working remotely via Skype at the time, between two offices, one in the US and UK office. And we would get one of the reasons one of my job description bits when I came on was not only to be a programmer on Dungeon Hero, but also to help facilitate production between the two studios, because, you know, we were pretty early case of trying to do that. Nowadays, it's completely common, right, you know, to have people working from home or remote locations. But at the time, it was a little more unusual, so it took some doing. But it's kind of baked into our DNA, so because our founders, being from U.S. and U.K. respectively, and moving back to their corners after a couple games, meant, you know, that we've operated that way for decades now.
Oh, so interesting. So the founders worked together on the first couple games, had enough success that they then went back home and set up two separate offices.
Yep. Yeah, for a little while. I think initially they worked on Civ City Rome in the U.S. office and Stronghold Legends in the U.K. office concurrently. I think that was the first, like, divergent project where there are two solid studios. But I might be wrong about this. I don't really know before that off the top of my head. But after that, we came back together to do Dungeon Hero, and that's when I came on.
Was Civ City Rome the one you guys got consulting with? Is it Sid Meier?
Yep.
Did you have input on that? Yeah.
Yep.
That must have been cool.
Yeah, being branded under Civ City. John Mina, one of our old programmers, he was the lead when I came on. Was in the U.S. office, and he had been the main, one of the main programmers on that as well. So I heard bits and pieces, but not much, you know, beyond playing the game a bit. How about yourself, Nick? Oh, go ahead.
I was about to say, how about you, Nick?
Yeah, so when the game, the action game that Tony was talking about, that was all part of the 2008 sort of credit crunch, you know, debacle. So that's when I graduated, or around that time. And I think they really scaled the company down to, like, I don't know, Tony, was it like 4 or 5 people?
At, like, it was very small.
Yeah. So they basically had like a Hail Mary shot, which was Stronghold Kingdoms, which is essentially like an online version of, like, a more casual online version of Stronghold. I came on shortly after that was launched, because it was basically allowing them to self-publish and have their own revenue, essentially. So they were, like, self-publishing on Steam for the first time, and this was way back when, like, if you wanted to upload a build to Steam, you'd have to, like, sort sort of email them on a Friday to get them to do that rather than just being able to click a few buttons. So it was like the early days of quite a lot of sort of medium-sized developers self-publishing. And they were just like, yeah, we need a marketing person. So I was the marketing person to join.
You were the marketing department.
Yeah, I was the marketing department for longer than I should have been in retrospect. Yeah, these days we've got like a couple of videographers. I've got someone working with me on the pure marketing side. We've got a community manager and, you know, all the kind of crucial, you know, elements of a marketing team. I joined when they were doing Stronghold Kingdoms. That was a really fun experience. We were like one of the first 8 games to release on Steam as free to play. So that was obviously really good for us. And people are still playing it today. Like, we still have like, I think like 100,000 monthly active users on that. So, and when they launched it, they were like, oh, this thing's going to run for like 2-3 years and we'll do a subscription and it'll be like World of Warcraft and then it'll just vanish. But it didn't. So it's kind of been, that's kind of been like the bedrock of the company since then, really. I've worked with Tony on Crusader 2 Warlords, a few other projects, and most recently Stronghold DE, which I kind of helped sort of come up with the concept for in the first place as well. So yeah, now I just help do all the boring management stuff that nobody else wants to do, essentially. all the stuff that needs to be done is vital, but it's like, oh, it's managing stuff and people.
Nobody wants to do that. But I How did like you it. Go straight from graduating to being part of this company?
I spent about 9 months just applying for stuff and working random jobs and doing a bit of traveling. And then I think in those 9 months I had 2 interviews. One of them was Firefly and I turned the other one down. And that was it, basically. But back then there were no kind of like... These days there are like mentorship schemes and quite a few awesome things to help people get into games. Although there are other challenges, obviously. But back then I was just like, I'm just gonna take the time to, you know, keep cracking away at it. And then, yeah, I think I started to apply to like QA roles initially. And then they were like, you've done a marketing degree, you're overqualified for that. And I was like, yeah, but I want to get in. They're like, no. So I got turned down for a bunch of those, and then. Yeah, and I saw a couple of marketing roles, and Firefly, you know, the vibes were good, and the vibes have been good since. So, yeah, I've just been very happy there. And it's one of those things where, like Devolver understands this as well, you know, if you retain staff and everyone's happy working together and you like the people, then that's as strong a motivator as anything else to stick around. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, these days we've actually got a marketing department. It's not just me, so that's good.
It grew from you, though.
It did.
So you were deliberate about getting into games.
Mm. Oh yeah, 100%.
Nice.
I don't think there was anything else. I had a friend who was trying to get into film at the time, and it just sounded like horrible. So yeah, like I love film and I love movies, but you know, I'm quite happy to just like have that as a hobby, and then I don't mind. I don't mind seeing how the sausage is made in games. It doesn't make me... I can still enjoy games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
In my case, I came out of grad school and worked in aerospace for a bunch of years before I got in touch with Firefly eventually. But it was a different approach because there weren't really game schools when I was in college and that kind of thing. I kind of, you know, everybody did it as passion projects and you kind of had to teach yourself or find... people who are into it, but there weren't really the internet communities for game making because it wasn't really approachable for non-engine users, and those were hundreds of thousands of dollars to license and, you know, no student access and all that good stuff.
What was your degree in, Tony? Your university degree?
So I got my master's in computer engineering, and I went to work for a company that worked on helicopter engine control systems.
Wow.
Sucked big time. As a consultant, too. They weren't even hiring. It was similar when I graduated in 2000. They had a... I was looking for jobs in, like, 2002, 2003. My friends who had taken jobs right out of college were already laid off, you know, because things were bad. So I ended up getting a I ended up getting a job as a consultant somewhere so they didn't have to do all the... sticky like employee retention stuff. I could just pay me a little more and keep me on without health insurance, etc. And I did that for quite a few years until I very fortunately one of my coworkers got me in touch with Firefly because he knew they were looking for people and he knew people at Firefly, and he just let me know about that. So I got in touch with them, and you know, being a big time hobbyist game developer, I had a decent portfolio to show, and you know, I was way into it.
So you'd already been making games.
Yeah, just for fun on the side. I mean, nothing I released. Yeah, yeah, just a bunch of programming, you know. That's nice. Still what we look for in job applicants and the like, is, you know, people who not only have the skill set, but they really like it and they do it for fun. You know, that's kind of the telling thing, if they're into it, you know.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, you find somebody who makes good games on their own, you're like, yeah, come here. Now do that. We'll pay you for it.
Yeah, it's as much like an interest and a taste thing as it is, you know. The skill set can be cultivated. It's really the passion, you know, that you want to see.
Yeah, nice. I'm a big loudmouth all the time, just on my own. And now I do this.
Do you find yourself doing, like, Muppet voices for kids and that kind of thing? Because I do.
You know, I don't often. Like, if it's in a context, I will. But I generally talk to children like small adults, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. Like
I do that with other people's children. Yeah.
Yeah. I worry about condescending to kids. I worry as a child, I felt very condescended to by a lot of adults. So I don't jump right into silly voices. I'll work my way to eventually like doing a silly voice, maybe contextually, but mostly I just try to like, be like, you're a person.
Yeah, you have to play it in the room, right? You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. It always makes me laugh on the news where they like interview kids and they speak to them like they're, you know, unable to form their own opinions. Whereas like you're talking to like a young teen, or like, you know, this kid's gonna have an opinion on something. It's just like, oh, so what do you think? And they give them 3 seconds and they're like, oh, that's fun. And they just like move on. Then they ask an adult who's like not necessarily any more intelligent. Like, you know. Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. They let that guy whinge on forever. Just like, well, I think, So the next game is a kids game featuring Mike, is what I'm piecing together here.
My lips are sealed.
Yeah, no hints.
Stronghold, Muppet, or Muppets in Medieval Times. Or
yeah, we're talking to whoever owns the Muppets rights, Disney. You guys can set us up with that.
We could pull one over on them, no problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get some favorable terms.
You've both been there for quite a while. Has Firefly remained kind of largely, except for like fluctuations, I suppose, in size, but how has the company changed over the years?
Tony, how do you feel about like pre and post one of the many market crashes that have happened over the last 20 years? One of the cycles.
Oh, gosh.
Has Firefly changed a lot since sort of before that? Because I only know
it was kind of... At the time when I came on, it was kind of large. There were a bunch of artists in the U.S. There were a bunch of coders in both the U.K. who'd worked on prior games and some new hires, including myself. And after Dungeon Hero was canceled, we dispersed basically, and what had grown quite a bit, you know, was really pared down, as Nick mentioned. And then we started to build up very slowly. Like, I mean, on Warlords, I was one of two coders. I mean, maybe two and a half if you count total, you know, allocation of other people at any given time. But we had, you know, skeleton crew teams because we all get to wear a lot of hats, which Fireflies are fond of pointing out. I mean, in the tenure of working there, you know, I've been able to do things like graphic design and UI animations and sound design and things that, you know, programmers don't usually let anywhere near, because there are far more qualified people around who made it their life's work to be awesome at it. But
you love doing that stuff.
In our case, because we're, oh, absolutely. Well, you know, when you, you know, getting back to the passion thing, like when you're into something, I think our kind of flattish organization is conducive to letting people roll with it. That's why the more into it people are, the better results, I think, you know, you get. Because, you know, whatever is done is a labor of love, right? You have this interest in doing the best you can at whatever particular task you set your mind to. And I think one thing the company's good at is when people exhibit some interest in something, nurturing that and giving them the tools they need to develop it. And,
that's awesome.
Usually seeing some pretty awesome results. Folks like Neil, you know, started out in QA. He's went to school to learn more, but basically became our main video motion graphics and video trailer producer, and now he's awesome. Our technical artist on our new Unreal game. It's a really, really impressive. And I don't know what else I can talk about, but other people have recently taken on new roles that are really awesome and like doing a great job with them.
Yeah, I think that's
diverges from the original description.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing, right? Like the way you keep staff and you keep a team happy is by if someone says, "Hey, I know I'm doing this as my full-time thing, but could I spend 20% of my time doing this?" And like encouraging them to do that and being like, "Yeah, we'd rather have you stay and branch out rather than leave," and like mix the team up. And then because keeping teams together is so important for like learning and, you know, just making better stuff again and again and again. Like, you know, like last year, Baldur's Gate 3, you know, didn't come out of nowhere. They've made Divinity 1 and 2, and like Warhammer Rogue Trader, they'd done Pathfinder, and like, you know, all these games come from teams that have stuck together, got better, and, you know, the companies have probably treated them well in order to achieve that. So, you know, if someone says, like the videographer guy that Tony was talking about, I was like, I hate losing this person on the marketing team, but also he should be an artist. So so he was like, he was basically lead artist on Stronghold's Definitive Edition, and yeah, he's also like an Unreal wizard as well, so it's better to just, you know, let these people do what they're passionate about and keep them around, keep them happy. And that's kind of like, that's, awesome. That's the main culture thing, really, I think. Like, other than the fact that we drink less now that we're working remotely, you know, that's about it, really. That's the only major
Speak
change.
Speak for yourself, Nick.
Yeah. Tony's over here like...
Don't have to drive to the office? What do you mean?
So wait, drinking more when everyone was in the office?
Yeah, because, you know, it would be Friday and someone would just say, like, pub? And you go to the pub.
Nice.
Whereas now it's like, we do see each other, but like you kind of have to organize it. So it's less like, less of that spontaneous thing. That's why that's why we come to the shows with you guys at Devolver, so we can get all our drinking in, you know, in the space of 3 days.
It's very efficient every time, yeah.
It's fucking fantastic.
It's way easier than hopping that 6-hour, 7-hour flight to London so I can go there.
You guys going to the pub tonight? All right.
All right.
You're going to the pub 8 hours, tomorrow night? I'll be there.
But yeah, I think that's the only kind of time that we were a bit concerned about the culture changing when it was like March, the whatever it was, 15th, 2020, when we were all like, cool, we're going home now. I'm sure we'll be back in 2 weeks. We were a bit concerned at that point, just on like, you know, how we'd keep it all together. And I think like we have since then started to hire like more remotely, which has been great because like we've increased the diversity of the company. We've hired some amazing people for roles that like we've desperately needed for, you know, a while now. So it's been awesome for that. But it's like,
programs.
How do we do that? Yeah, well, everyone.
I was trying to make a Tony joke.
Yeah, you no longer have to convince people that living in Connecticut is awesome to join our U.S. branch, for example. Yeah.
Yeah, are there any other developers in?
It's a heavy lift.
In Connecticut.
No, I'm the only U.S. programmer, actually. Isn't that crazy? Everybody else is London-based, or U.K. at least.
Do you have to take a lot of extra letter U's out of their code?
Yeah, all the time. They and they don't spell things like finalize correctly, you know, and like armor has, you know, all kinds of embellishments in it, and. It comes up over and over again. Oftentimes I think, why can't anybody spell? And I'm like, oh, that's not it.
But Tony's too nice, so he would never say that.
Oh, of course not.
But it's good to know you're silently judging my use of grammar.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I watched Downton Abbey with my wife, though, so we know all about British culture. We're down.
Yeah, you're an expert, basically.
So you were saying... 2020 happened, a lot more remote, which has been good. And then the next big tragedy happened in 2021 when Firefly was purchased by Devolver.
God. Don't even get us started.
I remember being told that the company had been sold, and I like inhaled, and then they followed up with to Devolver, and I was like, oh, thank God. Oh, Jesus. You know, like, and the stuff, yeah, stuff has come out, and it's just like, you know, about all sorts of things happening in the games industry, and I'm very happy to be here as part of this, because we've known like Graham and Andrew for ages, and Nigel and everybody else. So it was good. It was a good feeling, I think, from day one.
Nice. Fun fact: Andrew was the designer on Dungeon Hero, actually, at Firefly. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, what? No way!
Yeah, turns out our companies have kind of, speaking of like UK, US, we have our own special relationship, you know, before we even got married and became one company.
Nice. Huh. I did not. So Andrew, okay, cool. You say he was the lead designer on that?
Yeah, he was. He was also like, you know, young and fresh faced at the time, much like myself, and was working on. He was doing the like gameplay design and like just the like level layouts and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Cool.
No idea. It was cool. I remember he and Simon came over to the States at one point, the first time I met both of them, and they you know, we had some meetings and time to, you know, work face to face, and we prototyped a bunch of stuff really fast. We had these cool like cutout comics moving by the screen and rotating as you went through the different menu systems and whatnot, and we were so excited to release that. But fortunately, it never came out.
Now I'm sad. That's cool. I assume Devolver has really done very little directly with you guys other than what do we do? I mean, we don't really make you do anything, right? You just do your own thing, and we're just married now.
We're just married.
We just get free game codes. We have this, like, any game we want, we can get it for free. It's freaking awesome.
No, you guys have been awesome. I mean, like, even before we were married, I'm just going to roll with that term now. like, you know, like, Graham and Andrew would, like, come work in our offices, and you guys would very graciously allow us to, like, pitch up in the Devolver E3 parking lot, so that kind of stuff has continued. Like, you know, the event stuff's very easy because we've been doing it for a while now. But yeah, that's been awesome, and you guys have supported us in lots of ways, and whenever Nigel or whoever else reaches out for help on something, you know, we're always happy to oblige. So yeah, I think we're kind of we're slowly like joining together, but we're figuring each other out. But it's good.
Good. That's great. Rather than, you know, someone coming in like, we own this now, and then just like kicking a bunch of shit around.
Just and then being like, why is everything broken? Yeah, no, it's good.
RTS games are for nerds. Nerds don't play video games anymore.
We're going to put a battle pass in the new stronghold.
Why aren't any of these soldiers in bikinis?
monetize.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, you know, you said that thing about like people hanging out beforehand, you know, coming, helping each other out, coming in and doing the Devolver lot and stuff like that, and it really does show that people is what it really is about. You build relationships with people, you are cool with people, you find people that you work well with, that you gel with, that, you know, you can go through hell with, and you just make it work, and you help each other out along the way, and that makes real relationships, and it helps everybody out, and it's really neat to, I don't know, it's nice to be a part of a group that does that.
You can live so many ways, but if you have any degree of control over your work experience, and you can afford to worry about that level of thing, not just feeding your family or something, it's the only way to live, in my opinion. You know, that's what I like, is that internally we've had that corporate culture since I came on, at least, and I've been really impressed with it, and that's why I'm still there. Why stay happy, right? You know, the day-to-day life is so rewarding, and the coworkers are such nice people. Just to be able to exist in that environment together, it's pretty awesome. And that was the nice thing about joining Devolver, of all places, is that we already knew that we were getting it. You know, sympathetic, you know, organization in terms of the way things work between people there, you know, as well.
Yeah.
That's an awful lot of mutual back patting we're doing today.
It's
yeah. We're so good.
Man.
I mean, it's, yeah, it's just a lot of, oh, this is great.
Pretty good.
Lucky to be here.
Just funny talking about, like, you know, saying you're like, oh, like, we had you at the E3 parking lot and stuff like that. Because I think maybe to, like, an outsider hearing that, like, oh, Firefly and Devolver getting married, they might think, like, what? It seems like a weird fit, but it's like, oh, yeah, no, I've been rubbing elbows for a long time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think there are some commonalities. There's some weird stuff in the Stronghold games if you look close enough.
Oh sure, yeah.
Like, you know, people threw weird stuff from trebuchets. We had one game that had an entire system that was like just farming shit. It was called Gong Farming. So like, there's lots of like weird stuff that's in the Firefly games that wouldn't seem too out of place in Devolver title, but yeah, I do appreciate it from the outside. The RTS crowd is like the weird nerdy kid in the corner of the family photo.
That's what you think is Devolver-esque, is shit farming.
Not shit farming specifically, but you know, off the wall stuff.
Okay. We did do Cult of the Lamb, JM. There's a lot of
that actually. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Never mind.
That's a significant part of that game.
You're right.
But yeah, like I feel like sometimes RTS is kind of this like weird nerdy kid at the back of like the class, and it's really interesting actually talking to other RTS developers and like talking to like the Age of Empires guys, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, we had this huge, you know, this big announcement, da da da, but it's like, unless it's like in that sort of like hardcore audience, like that hardcore audience loves it and goes to town on it, but like everyone else is kind of just like, it is a bit of a niche for sure. So I can appreciate from the outside in, you know, why Devolver and Firefly might not look like, you know, the most natural fit, but yeah.
it'll be easier to get your head around when we start pulling in characters from other Devolver games into our series, you know.
Yeah, when we put Volvi into Stronghold.
Right.
When you have to hunt Volvi out in the wilderness. With all the other deers and stuff like that. Or raised Volvi. Yeah, you know, whatever. Whatever the brand guidelines are for Volvi, we'll follow those.
To a letter, yeah, absolutely.
Man, you joke, but I'd play the shit out of a crossover Devolver RTS game.
No, I was just like, so an Enter the Gungeon RTS, you say.
Yeah. Different, you could have like a different like castle building, but like, you know, per the franchise, like that would actually be pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah, you have like the Lamb faction and the Hotline Miami faction that just murders people with masks on. Yeah, I like it.
I was thinking Hotline Miami would be like a natural disaster thing where basically some guy in a mask just goes through your base and you wreck shit. You're like, what the fuck happened?
Sire, there's a guy in a horse head mask terrorizing the village. With a machine gun.
Get everybody out of there. He'll leave once everybody's dead in there. All right, cool. Looking forward to that.
Yep. Just announced that. That's the unannounced project, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Damn it, it's out of the bag. Loose lips.
What is it about RTS games that you guys really enjoy, you know, generally, and then specifically like what the Stronghold games bring to the genre, if that's not too nerdy of a question?
No. Tony, do you want to go first? Or
sure, I can. I keyed in on the word nerdy and I'm about to jump on that. Yeah, for me, so I'm not a huge like competitive player of RTS games. Like, I played StarCraft and I started out on Warcraft 2. We would network it, which was freaking amazing. I mean, there's nothing like it, right? We had I was in college, so the dorm scene there was just happening on Friday nights. It was crazy. But loved that. Age of Empires 2, played to death, you know, when that came out. And I think what really attracted me to it was the systems. So, like, just the way the mechanics of everything works and the way the people produce goods and they deliver them and then you set rates and that kind of thing is the most intriguing to me. And then all the knock-on things, like it's an absolute tech playground if you're into coding, because we have problems to solve that no other genres deal with generally. you're only now starting to see things like giant unit counts, you know, outside of maybe RTS or, you know, specialist kind of FPS effects or something like that. You know, we have to render many more things on screen than are generally supported by game engines. At the same time, the way we network our games is very different. We don't just send like controller inputs to a server that then figures everything out and sends it to everybody, maybe do some local prediction or something. We have to run the exact same deterministic simulation on every computer, which means the simulation core of the game is just ironclad, or it's not going to work at all. You need to run, you know, and this is the only way to do this kind of game really practically, because you can't send 1,000, you know, troop positions over the network at a high enough rate to be fun, you know, and all the other things that the game has to compute. You can't have a server running that really unless everybody's just looking at a viewport to that, you know, and not actually running anything locally. So the challenges are all there, and there's a lot of room for game craft and finesse. You kind of, if you're a creative coder, it's a very fun place to be. So I really just revel in that. You know, I really like it. I like that I've been able to touch a lot of systems. I love, we have some juniors, some junior coders who came on a couple years ago. I love watching them get into the stuff and like really be passionate about diving in, because it's, if you are into that level of geeky coding, it's a thing you can't really get in other genres to the same extent. Mostly graphics and, you know, spectacle focused. This is more systems and, it's almost like designing a real-time board game in some ways, which is, you know,
for me.
Like things like, I'll play something like Dwarf Fortress, to drop a name, and like, I just love the systems in there. Like, I don't even play it, you know, to try and win or anything. I just want to like see how everything works. Like, that's good enough.
When they added all the visuals to Dwarf Fortress, did you just go like, eh, like, don't need that? I just look at the numbers.
I was actually, I actually had used, because the game was free, right? So I'd used, all these mods that people put out. Like, they reverse engineered the running executable memory address locations so that you could have a better UI to like what the dwarves were doing and stuff like that. And I
sometimes, you know, Tony, you say things and I just don't understand, and I just nod and smile. And I'm just like, this man is so much smarter than I am.
It's like... not that, it's a it's really a focus on just what I'm gonna geek out on opposed to normal people. Really.
Yeah.
It's all jargon.
Yeah.
He didn't say anything.
Yeah, people are going to fact check this and be like, he's just talking out of his ass. How is this man employed?
So you'd already been playing a prettier version of Dwarf Fortress.
Yeah, I made it all work, you know, years ago when I got into it. And then, you know, I followed tutorials. It's the only way you can even begin to understand the game and know what's in it. And there's some great tutorials online. I just kind of, you know, web pages at the time. I just walked through it. And then, when Kit Fox did the update, I was all over it.
Nice.
So yeah, I haven't actually fired it up in Steam yet, but that's on my to-do list for this game, because I want to get another dose of inspiration from that, you know, as I develop our current game. And you know, having played basically anything that even is remotely close to one of our games, you know, we have great interest in playing and understanding what they do well and why, and what we like about it and what we think, you know, we wouldn't do. And you know, nobody is quite aiming at what we're aiming at, so we can, you know, slot into our lane pretty well and figure out what we can do even better, you know, or they can give us inspiration.
I have a niche question. You mentioned a bunch of old, you know, or a couple old RTS games and you're into it. Did you ever play a game called Warwind?
Sounds familiar.
Rings a bell, yeah.
It was like, it was an RTS-ish game where, like, you had all these different alien factions. There were no humans or anything like that. There were a bunch of different aliens. But you got better units only by upgrading lower level units, which, I mean, I only ever played against the computer, and I always just got my ass handed to me because I couldn't upgrade the units fast enough. But it was an interesting mechanic. So never mind.
Oh, that was cool. Part out. Man, the key art for that game really looks wild.
Yeah.
I've not heard of this game either.
That looks awesome.
It was, I don't think it was terribly popular, but I thought it was really cool. It had some unique mechanics as far as RTSs go.
Free on Steam.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well, hell, maybe I'll pick up some Warwind. Now I got to look and make sure this is the same game, because somebody could have made like a battle fart simulator, and I'm here making a fool out of myself.
Somehow Devolver didn't sign them.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you build all these buildings, and then you send your units into the buildings to get upgraded or whatever. You hire mercenaries. Yeah, whoa, it's free on Steam, huh?
I'm gonna check this out.
All right.
Thanks, GM. Yeah.
Sure thing. Interesting. Oh, weird. This says it was released in 2021. I assure you, it was not original.
Maybe that's when it came to Steam.
Interesting. Yeah, must have been. All right, then. Well, there's a weird RTS for you to chew on.
Nice.
Yeah. How about you, Nick?
I think, basically, I grew up during the era of Warwind and, Command & Conquer and Age of Empires and Warcraft 2 and all these, crazy seminal, genre-forming games. And I just loved playing, these days most people play games, they just kind of hang out and talk, and a lot of games are geared towards, just kind of a space where you can just shoot aliens and chat to your friends and, that kind of multiplayer focused environment. Well, that's kind of how those games were for me back then. I'd play Command & Conquer on skirmish mode with a friend, both of us against the AI, because we couldn't be the AI individually either. We were not good enough. But we just hang out, chat, catch up, and that was kind of why I kind of loved RTS games originally. And I just loved all the weird schlocky B movie elements to the Command & Conquer series. And I loved history, so Age of Empires was awesome. I did history at university, so I just loved I just dug all that kind of nerdy stuff that was involved in RTS games. And I wasn't
you minored in Wololo or something like that.
I minored in Wololo, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just loved those games, and I met the Westwood Studios guys recently, who are now Petroglyph Games, and I was just saying to them that you guys are part of the reason why I joined the industry in the first place, just because I just think RTS at the time was a completely new genre, and it wasn't anything else.
It wasn't niche back then. It was dominant during that time. It was huge.
Yeah,
or at least I thought so. Maybe I just played RTS.
No, it was. I think I was looking at Command & Conquer lifetime sales are 30 million or something like that. So pretty good, considering a game hasn't come out in that series for a new game for a while. It's a big niche, but I love that kind of stuff. And then when I saw the job at Firefly, I was just yep, I love these kind of games. Count me in. And that was it, really. I love the kind of social aspect of sitting there for hours, building up your defenses to the point where your victory was basically assured. Because if I was playing on my own, I'd just get crushed. So we just wall up, and then drive all the tanks in. And but I'm similar to Tony. I've never been in an RTS, a hardcore multiplayer RTS player. I've got a friend who does sort of semi-competitive StarCraft 2. And I can't do that. There's no way I can do that. It's just not for me. But I think a lot of RTS players, there was some good data recently. Quite a big YouTuber did a pile of different, features in strategy games that people like. And it was basically multiplayer was actually not that important for people. People mainly just wanted a story and co-op. Because they probably have one friend or a few friends that they really want to play with, and it's not this it's not going to have 100,000 people playing at once kind of genre, but you might have one buddy who hasn't played an RTS in 15 years, but then Command & Conquer Remastered comes out and suddenly they're like, hey man, let's go online, play multiplayer, tonight. It kind of holds a special place in a lot of people's hearts, and I really like that kind of, I like that. This sort of nerdy part of the games industry. It's a nice little group.
Interestingly, like you were saying, the that kind of genre sort of come back. It's actually retro enough at this point that many people who got into games well after it was a thing have a totally different idea of what an RTS is, because they saw post StarCraft II you know, levels of competitive kind of games. Yeah. And they never really saw the, like, nitty-gritty mechanical things you'd see in the early games we were talking about, like Warcraft 2 or something. So when people saw, like, DE, for example, Stronghold DE, which is a remake of the first game from 2000, like...
Yeah.
They saw mechanics that were fresh again because they were so old, and kind of conventions that were a thing for a while and then were kind of like optimized out or weren't around anymore were suddenly very novel. And actually, it turns out the game loop, you know, in general is fun and maybe even more accessible if you are not so into the competitive style multiplayer based designs, you know, that you can tend to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, just like, this whole conversation is like making me want to go play a whole bunch of RTS games, and I'm just trying to remind myself that that is so many hours in the dark staring at the screen to beat one level.
Yeah, that's what you get for inviting our chief marketing officer.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, sorry.
Damn it. That's all right. I'm just thinking of all the classics that I really, really love now. I mean, Warcraft 2, Command & Conquer, Dark Reign was a really cool one. That was the first one with terrain. So, like, people could walk up a hill, but your hover tanks couldn't go over a hill, like, if it was certain steepness. You could program the AI on your individual units on that one. That was the first one with that. But, yeah, competitive RTS always looked like it took too much of the fun out of it. Like, everything gets so... Just, you have to do it a certain way to even compete, or at least from my perspective. It always seemed more fun to, like you said, play with a friend against the computer.
Yeah, that's we've always had a very systems focus on things. We have the RTS elements, and we support, you know, multiplayer RTS competitive gaming, but we don't get the following of some of the big names because that's not our, you know, main focus.
Yeah,
and when we do it, you know, you need a huge team of designers to continuously evolve the game, because there's going to be a meta for the people who are way into it, and the community's going to settle on one way to do it, you know, because inevitably there's going to be, you know, certain optimized approaches to any complex system like that. And, you know, we can do our best to kind of try and throw spanners in that early on and say, all right, well, in this kind of map, you won't be able to use, you know, the preferred strategies. You know, it'll have to change quite a bit based on your situation or something, but at the end of the day, there will be a kind of a playbook that gets stale after a while unless it's a continuously evolving game. And then you have this huge problem where you've invested all this balancing and fun tuning into the single player game, and if you start messing with the stats on the units and that kind of thing, you'll throw that way off, and suddenly all that playtesting you did is no longer any good. So you have two choices. You can have a huge team who continuously of designers who continuously checks everything all the time, and that means, you know, long servicing of a game and just generally tons of people working on it. Or you can have different rule sets for multiplayer and single player, and then deal with the little problems of that being different on each and that kind of thing. But ultimately, it's a you're kind of doing a particular thing when you're making a sport out of multiplayer, as opposed to a you know, a fun collection of game systems approach.
Yeah.
I remember once speaking to someone from, I think he was from EA, and he was like, I simply couldn't imagine making an RTS with fewer than 50 developers. And I was like, let me tell you, my friend, there is a way. It takes something from you, but there is a way.
That's funny.
Yeah, we always, how big is your... we always have a good laugh about that. Oh, no, I was just going to say, that's always a point of... humor for us, as we're like, oh yeah, so I'm going to work on this one thing for the next couple months. We know that Microsoft and Ensemble, I guess Relic now, have 20 people on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll do it part-time for the next 2 months, and hopefully it'll be pretty good, you know.
We have got a pretty
big... How big is the team these days?
Yeah, I was going to say, Unreal's definitely... The Unreal project definitely is the biggest team we've had in a while. How many coders you got now, Tony?
So we have 4 full-time coders, and we have a designer who's very good with code, and he's doing a prototype in the meantime. So he's kind of prototyping and getting this playable thing going so they can try out new concepts, the design team. And on our end, we're basically, you know, architecting and implementing the actual gameplay. You know, we've moved on to that part now. But we're still very strongly... a big part of our time is still building things that we had in the past ready to go when we started a new game, because our engine had it already, like, you know, proven multiplayer, for example. you know, that's still in the works for us. But we have four people and, you know, main coders on it. We have a senior guy, Matt Smith, who I've worked in the past with on the other games, and he's awesome. And then we have two new guys who are amazing. They've been fantastic so far because they're passionate and they're very capable, you know, coders to begin with. And then they're also into what they're doing in particular. So it's been great.
Nice. But, I mean, how big is Firefly right now?
I think we're like 45 these days. Okay. Yeah, so that's kind of split between we have like the we have the DE team, so the Definitive Edition team, who's working in Unity. So that's like one coder, a handful of artists, and designer. And then we have the Unreal team, like Tony said, like four coders, like again, handful of artists, designer. And then we've got like six marketing people. And then the rest of the company is kind of, because obviously we have the online stuff to support as well. So that's like, you know, that requires web coders and, you know, all the people that understand servers and all that kind of, you know, mythical stuff that I don't really, you know, understand at all. But yeah, we're kind of split sort of three ways basically between DE, Unreal, and the online side of things, about 45 in total.
Nice. That's the Stronghold Kingdoms?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to try Stronghold Kingdoms now.
Yeah,
and Warwind, apparently.
Warwind. I need to go back to Dark Reign. Apparently there was a Dark Reign 2. I didn't know this.
Was there really?
Yeah, it's got a wiki page, so I believe it.
Well, hell.
Well, it's nice, you know, thanks to Steam and GOG and the like, we're there's a good chance you can get a modern executable that'll run on a new computer instead of having to dig the 486 out of your dad's garage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Find the floppies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. God, floppies.
Do you remember when games came on like four different floppy disks or more? Mm-hmm. That was.
I remember installing Sierra Adventure games from floppy disk, and then like you get to the eighth one after a half hour, and it would have gone bad or something, and then you have nothing you can do. Like, yeah, it was very sad.
People will be listening to this podcast having no idea what we're talking about. They'll be like, "Do they mean like the save icon?" On like a,
exactly.
On like a phone.
Sorry, I just spiraled out on how like that icon is now like only exists as it's not a real thing, and like how that glyph is going to evolve and change over the years, and like the concept of language. And sorry, I spun out.
Shit! Now I'm spiraling out.
It's an etymological risk you face, you know, as a lover of language and symbols and the like.
Good word.
Yeah, but just shit. Yeah, well, you just don't even realize these things are going to happen, and then time moves faster for us than it did for previous generations. I mean, a wheat symbol was a wheat symbol for thousands of years and still is, but floppy disk, shit's gone. Only a symbol now.
I mean, who would have predicted vinyl would outsell CDs in 2024? Any of those things don't make any sense out of context. Like,
yep. Speaking of things that don't make sense, the Segway.
Your Segway showed up?
Your Segway showed up.
He unpacked it.
Where can folks find all of y'all's games, and if they want to follow Firefly, where do they follow Firefly?
Most of our games are on GOG and Steam. We try to get as much of stuff on GOG as possible, just because they're awesome to work with. But yeah, everything is on Steam. We have a few games on the App Store if you just search for Stronghold. And yeah, follow us. I guess like these days, I should push people towards the TikTok. We have a TikTok account, and we're Firefly Studios or Worlds. Let me check. I should know this. Firefly Studios on TikTok is probably where you should look for us. And we are on Twitter. I'm going to call it Twitter and not the weird name that it was replaced with.
Yeah,
but yeah, we're Firefly Worlds on Twitter. Yeah.
Worlds, plural?
Worlds, yes. I don't know why it was Worlds. I think maybe there's like a Detroit-based photography company that took fireflystudios.com, and that's why We're fireflyworlds.com, and that's why the socials have been worlds rather than studios. But yeah, Firefly Studios on TikTok and Firefly Worlds on Twitter.
Awesome. I'm most proud of our work on the sci-fi Firefly series.
You made everything that was good about it.
There's also a Firefly Aerospace now, which is a big drain on our resources. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, it makes sense, though, with you on the team and all your helicopter experience.
Whew, man, always consulting.
Yeah. ABC. Jared, did you know that we have a Threads account at Devolver?
I don't even know what that means.
I know. It's the new Facebook Meta version of Twitter. I only know because when I look at Instagram, it shows me, sometimes it'll show me a thread that it wants me to see all of, and I was like, hey, that's from Devolver, and then I click it, it's like, join Threads, and I'm like, fuck you.
You're selling it to me, man.
It's like Twitter, but
I'm blocking it right
Facebook.
Now.
Blocking it right now. Yeah. Well, I'll just do the thing then. We also have a Twitter, Devolver Digital, and we have a TikTok, Devolver. We got them all. What do we got?
TikTok, Discord,
Twitch, Discord.gg/Devolver Digital. You guys got a Discord?
We do.
Firefly Discord.
We have a stronghold Discord.
Ah. Discord.gg/stronghold.
I think so. That's what I need.
I don't want to just say that with confidence because I might send people like some kind of white supremacist.
I think you can search for it. I think we are searchable on Discord. So if you search for Stronghold, official Stronghold, it'll come up under that. Oh, and I totally forgot to plug the YouTube account. We do a lot of stuff on YouTube. So again, Worlds rather than Studio. Firefly Worlds on YouTube. Just before I forget that.
Fantastic.
Is it an old person thing to be on YouTube now? Because that's where I am. And
don't say that, Tony.
I'm starting to worry.
We've got YouTube.
Awesome.
Devolver does.
Awesome.
So it must be trendy.
I'll fit right in.
It must be. Yeah.
I hope YouTube never goes away. I like YouTube.
Yeah, that's it is one of the nicer experiences. Does Devolver have an ICQ or something like that? That's from the 2000s.
Nice.
That'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we have one of those. We have a Facebook.
Nice.
That's pretty old.
So, like, people in old folks' homes who want to get into our games have access.
Yeah, for sure. We're trying. We're trying to stay relevant. Well, sweet. Thank you guys for coming on and talking about all this cool stuff and talking about RTS games.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been awesome.
I hope you enjoyed
it. Thanks so much for having us.
I know I did. I don't care about anybody
else. My day's great.
All right.
Sleep. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.